My name is Martin Woodward, and today we're going to be talking about taking your ALM to the cloud with the Team Foundation service. Can I quickly ask, who's currently using Team Foundation Server? If you could raise your hands for me. Okay, wow. And who's using TFS 2010? Let's start there. TFS 2012? Earlier? Okay. I won't ask which version. It's cool. Okay, great. Thank you. So as I say, my name is Martin Woodward. That's how you can get hold of me. MartinWoo@Microsoft.com, or you can get hold of me there on Twitter and abuse me if you want. It's always good to get back after doing the show and see what comments people have been saying about you while you've been on live. And if this is really exciting and you're really getting passionate about Team Foundation Server and want to learn more about Team Foundation Server, then I actually do a podcast with some of my friends all about TFS. It's incredibly nerdy. So if you go along to radiotfs.com for a podcast. Now, I wrote a couple of books as well. Not that that makes me an expert, I'd say, but, you know, I just know some people who were clever, so I helped to. We put a book together, so that's good. Great. I work on the Visual Studio team. I'm what's called a program manager, which is quite strange, really, because I don't really program much anymore. Most of the code I write, my devs try and take out before it gets live. And then I also don't actually manage any people. I manage the program itself, which is quite a hard job to explain to my wife what I actually do. She mostly thinks I delete email. So yeah, that's probably what I do most of the time. So I work on the Visual Studio team, and I work on Team Foundation Server. Specifically, I actually look after the Git stuff and the cross-platform side. That's the areas that I'm responsible for. But all the work that we do is on the service. As you might be able to tell by my accent, I'm not American. I actually live in Northern Ireland and work remote. I telecommute from my home in the middle of rural Northern Ireland. So people wonder why I live there, and that's why I live there. Absolutely beautiful part of the world. Even though it always rains. So that's why we always have rainbows and green fields. That's the view from my desk. And that's where I sit and I work and collaborate with the rest of my team. Half of the team live in North Carolina. That's where half of the Team Foundation Server team live. And the other half of the team actually live in Redmond, Washington. He says, there we go. That's where the major parts of the team live. But interestingly, we do have team members, especially in my team. My team's a very distributed team. And we have people living in Chicago, working remote like I do, in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Philadelphia, China, India. We had some people from France and London. So we have people all around the world contributing to our project. Until probably, I'm trying to remember, 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half ago, our Team Foundation Server was actually here in Building 42 in Redmond on the Microsoft campus. And that's where we would connect to do all of our source control and work item tracking and builds and things. But we changed that now, and we actually moved our Team Foundation Server to the cloud. So our Team Foundation Server lives in this, you know, in the cloud, which actually is, you know, when you see it, it's not as glamorous as that. It's basically a shipping container that sits in what looks like a huge car park of shipping containers just outside Chicago. So that's where our particular server lives. And we connect to that over the internet. Now, for people like me who work remote, this is an absolute life saviour, because actually my network traffic now, rather than having to come from here in Northern Ireland down through a concentrator to London and then back over to Dublin, where it gets on the VPN network for Microsoft, and then it gets routed across some dark fibre across down here and then bounced around over to Washington. Rather than going on the internal VPN, I can actually connect directly over to the public internet. So typically, my latency went down from, it was around 500 milliseconds to around 260 milliseconds from here. But interestingly, latency isn't a huge problem with Team Foundation Server. Because we have always worked remote, because we've always had these people in North Carolina talking to a server that was remote for them, Team Foundation Server works really well over a wide area network. But what we found does help a lot is bandwidth. And coming through the VPN, I would max out the bandwidth, even on a quiet day, at around about, it feels like a dial-up modem, 52 kilobytes per second or something like that. It's, you know, incredibly slow. But TFS still works fine over that. Talking to Azure, where our TFS server is hosted, when I do a get latest and I download source code, I saturate my entire ADSL connection at home. It's unbelievable. The Azure data centers have got, you know, more bandwidth than anything I've ever seen. It just all the files just fly down to my machine. So it's been fantastic for me, and you'd actually have to pry the service, you know, out of my cold, dead hands. It's so valuable to me. It means I don't have to get connected to the VPN to work every day. And it's been really good for our team. Actually, again, because our team, even though they're on the Microsoft network over here in North Carolina, they have a pretty rubbish connection across the states over to Redmond, but they have a really good local internet connection, as often is the case. You know, not very good corporate connection, but a really good local internet connection. And so that helps again. So people in North Carolina can get Fios and, you know, crazy gigabit, whatever, I don't know, fancy American bandwidth, and they can connect to Azure incredibly fast as well. So it's great for us. Who here already has an account at tfs.visualstudio.com? Fantastic. Okay, well, there we go. So if you want to get an account, then go along to tfs.visualstudio.com and sign up, and you can get one for free. TFS.visualstudio.com is where we host our cloud version of Team Foundation Server, which is what we're going to talk about. Just to quickly, as most of you are already using Team Foundation Server, I won't labor this point, but TFS provides you all the core services you need, you know, source control and builds and test case management and work item tracking, and it's the core server that you share your data with your team and that you use to talk to everybody. Okay. So when you're looking at your options for hosting Team Foundation Server, you've basically got three options today. The first one is the one everybody's been using up until now, most of you are using, and that's hosting Team Foundation Server on premises, so inside your firewall. And you all know we've done a lot of work to improve the setup experience to make it easy to install Team Foundation Server locally on a server. And you can actually install it on a laptop VM or whatever. You know, it's fairly easy to install nowadays compared to how it used to be back in 2005. That gives you the most flexibility, and it gives you the most control, obviously, because it's dedicated hardware. It's inside your network, and it gives you the most, you know, you do the compliance auditing and all that sort of stuff. Then on the opposite end of the spectrum, we have the Team Foundation Service. And the Team Foundation Service is a service that we operate. It's the same code as Team Foundation Server, but running in Azure. It's exactly the same code. We don't have two source control trees. It's the same code that we use, off the same branch. And if you are installing the Team Foundation Server 2013 preview we announced yesterday, made available yesterday. That's actually the bits that are, that's actually roughly the same version that's in the cloud. I say roughly because I'll explain in a second, it's not quite. It's actually about 2 weeks older than the version that's running on the cloud, believe it or not already, even though we made it available today or yesterday. The reason for that is that we ship to the cloud every 3 weeks from our main development branches. So every 3 weeks, we are updating the cloud version of Team Foundation Server. And that's kind of part of the deal. You get the server that's the very, very, very latest version. You know, less than... We have a three-week sprint, and then we deploy it the next week. So it's always less than 3 weeks old, the code. So actually, the code up in the cloud is just slightly, by one sprint, newer than the version that's on-premise. But we get there. And what we do is we ship to the cloud every 3 weeks, and then every now and then we ship an update to Team Foundation Server, where we take the latest version that we've got in the cloud, we put it on a DVD, and we ship it to you so you can install it in on-premise. And we also, every now and then, it was a year since we last did a major release of TFS, and here we are doing another major release of TFS. We will bundle them up, put them on a DVD, and send them out. But it's the same code. Now, the service has some limitations, which we're going to cover, because we upgrade the service for you. We have to limit what can be done on that to make sure we can upgrade everybody, is one limitation. And also to do with running in Azure and the architecture and things, we have a few other limitations which we'll cover. But if you want the full flexibility and all the Active Directory integration and SharePoint integration and all the bells and whistles and just customize the heck out of your TFS instance, but you don't want the hassle of hosting it yourself, then as well as our Team Foundation service, we also have partners that take the on-premise version of TFS with updates and actually make it available to you, and we'll work with you to host, you know, a version of TFS on your behalf, a dedicated instance of TFS on your behalf. And if you go to aka.ms/TFS hosting, you can get a list of our hosting partners that can do that for you. And they will often not just sell Team Foundation Server hosting, but sell services as well, you know, like consulting services or help you upgrade your old projects over to TFS, that sort of thing. So they can be very valuable partners. So why the Team Foundation Service? Well, who here has installed Team Foundation Server themselves before? Okay, a few hands. Who enjoyed installing Team Foundation Server for themselves? Okay, zero hands. That's why we've got the Team Foundation Service. It's incredibly easy to get started. You just go along to tfs.visualstudio.com, sign up, create an account, and you're going within 20 seconds, hopefully. We'll find out in a minute. Currently, it's free for teams of up to 5 users, and it will stay that way. We will have paid plans coming, so we haven't announced any the pricing for this yet, but we have said we will announce pricing this year sometime. However, if you've got MSDN subscriptions, who's got MSDN subscriptions? Okay, well, there you go. If you've got MSDN, and we've got the list of the MSDN subscriptions that are eligible, then that'll also be, it's also included as an MSDN benefit. So basically, for most of the room here, it's definitely already free. And for anyone with a team less than 5, it's free. In between, then there will be some cost, but the cost will be very, very competitive. And much cheaper than running a Team Foundation server on-premise, because we get huge economies of scale having, you know, hundreds of thousands of users running on our server that runs out in Azure. Well, and we will pass those, you know, savings and operational costs on to you as well. As I mentioned, because we deliver in three-week sprints, the service is constantly being updated with new features. For some people, that's a feature that you're running the latest bits. For some people, that's scary that you're running the latest bits because you have to train everybody on the latest bits. Now, we try not to break the UI. We try not to change the UI and do anything too controversial that will, you know, stop people from being able to find the way around the site or anything. But we're very deliberate about how we introduce change, but it is going to change all the time, and that's either good, depending on your opinion, or bad. And then finally, because we're running out in Azure, we can take benefit of some unique Windows Azure integrations just out of the box, and I'll show you those. So, is it for me? Well, if you're a small team, definitely. If you're a team of less than 5 people, if you're a team greater than 5, but you know, you you don't want the hassle of installing a server, then definitely it's for you. So I've been very surprised at the number of large organizations that have actually been interested in TFS in the cloud, the service. When we started, we were kind of aiming at the small team market, you know, that sort of thing. And we found more and more large organizations actually coming on board and using the service purely because they didn't have to deal with the hassle of getting machines up and running. They didn't have to deal with upgrades. They could focus on their core business expertise, which was solving their business problems, not managing servers. I thought there would be, you know, because storing your source code out in the cloud, that was a big step for people to take to do that. And for some organizations, that's not actually, you know, some people don't want to store their source code in the cloud, even though we lock it down and have it nice and secure. They just don't want that. And that's fine. We have an on-premise version you can use. But I've been surprised at the number of large companies who want to use software as a service. Another big source of account signups that we see is for people just playing with TFS. This is a great way to evaluate Team Foundation Server and evaluate brand new features. You can download the latest version of the Visual Studio 2013 preview, which we made available yesterday. You can download that, create yourself an account, and you know that you're using the very latest version of TFS against the very latest version of Visual Studio. And you get to try out all those features, and maybe you just use it to sort of evaluate if you want to upgrade your on-premise version of TFS to the latest as well. And I personally use it, and I went when TFS was getting started, I use it to store all my little, you know, private toy projects that I just play around with at home and use, and, you know, little utilities I build for myself and my family. I just store all those out in the cloud as well. I mentioned I work on a podcast. The website for the podcast is stored in my TFS account. I have a little application I use to convert MP3 files and do poor ID3 tagging in and upload them out to the CDN, and all that is projects stored out in the service. So that's a great way just to you know, have an account, have a TFS server that's free for you as an individual, and you can just use it and get all the benefits out of it. Now, as I mentioned, it is free for 5 users and it comes with all the features. When we have full billing switched on, there will be certain features, again, we're still working out the details, but there will be some features that are premium features that will actually, there'll be a certain free amount of, but then there will be, you know, you'll be able to sort of upgrade, hopefully. For instance, builds is one where we know that we'll definitely have a certain amount allowance of, you know, free build support out in the cloud, but we can't support somebody doing parallel builds of, you know, every single second, because we only have a limited pool of build machines that we can make available to people, and we need to share those equally across all of our customers. So we'll definitely have ways of upgrading and you know, getting the level of service that you want, but that's what we have for now. Okay. There's some limitations limitations of the service. The main thing to keep in mind is it is the same code. It's the same core Team Foundation server code. So all the source control, build tracking, test case management, project management, being able to talk to it from Eclipse or from Xcode and just go straight to the service or straight to the server, that all works great. Obviously, the service has some advantages when it comes to setup and administration. It's dead easy. You don't have to do anything. Just sign up for an account and provision yourself one. And it's also fantastic for collaborating with people outside your firewall, because you don't need to open ports and get external connector licenses and all that stuff. You just add their live ID to your account and they can come in and get connected into TFS. However, we don't have test lab management virtualized. We don't have SharePoint integration in the cloud. We're looking at Office 365 and integrating with portals, and you can link your team project to portals, but we don't have the ability, you know, in SharePoint to be able to display lists from TFS and things like that. So that's a limitation. And we don't have, and this is a a killer for some people is we don't have the same reporting capabilities in the cloud. We run on top of SQL Azure, and the data warehousing side for your individual team projects is actually quite processor intensive to run, and SQL Server reporting services has only recently come available out in SQL Azure. So we don't have reporting there at the minute. It's the same as basically a TFS basic installation. And then the final one, which I see stops larger companies especially coming over, I mentioned you control access to TFS using to the service using Live ID, your Microsoft ID, sorry, corporate slip, using Live ID slash Microsoft account. I don't know what we're supposed to call it. Anyway. Not your domain credentials, okay? So if that's an issue, then fine. At the minute, on-premise is the way to go if you want to use Active Directory groups. We are obviously looking to synchronize with ADFS and to synchronize with the work that's going on there, and we will have that eventually, but we don't today. So right now, it's just controlling access through Live ID, which works great for some people because it means you don't have to create Active Directory accounts for these external contractors, but it does mean it's not synchronized to your corporate credentials. Now, you can, of course, have a Live ID with your corporate email, but it, you know, like I have Martin at woodwardweb.com, I have as my Live ID. So it doesn't have to be like hotmail.com or live.com or outlook.com, but you do need a Live ID. Right. So what I thought we would do is just have a bit of a play, really, and we'll just go through. And if anybody's got any questions, please raise your hand, and we'll just interrupt. I'm not a very formal guy, and we'll just go through. So let's see if this works. Woohoo! Right then. So the first thing I want to do is show you how to sign up. So it's very easy. You've got a big red button here. So tfs.visualstudio.com. You can learn all about it. Watch some fancy videos and things if you want to. Go on the learn, and go, you know, whatever. You can go to here to sign up for free, and then you go and create yourself an account. Now, this is where I always hold my breath and make sure the internet in the conference center is actually working quite well today. So here we go. It's not too bad. So I'm just going to create an account. So we'll say TEE 2013. Let's just hope that's available. You never know. We'll find out. And then I'm going to sign in. So I'm going to sign in as Martin at woodwardweb.com. I can't actually talk and type my password at the same time. There we go. Always end up saying my password. Oh, and typed in wrong. Martin at woodwardweb.com. There we go. So yeah, for talking and doing passwords. So it's going to come in and create my account. I've actually got one made behind the scenes if we need to. So there you go. It's creating te2013.visualstudio.com. And this is doing the equivalent of, you know, installing TFS, getting the ISO image, building a server, finding a machine, getting the machine delivered, putting the RAM in, you know, all that stuff. Ta-da, we have TFS. Easy as that. So I would encourage you all to go and sign up for account now that I've got one. So it's not going to slow down the account creation process anymore. Make sure you go get yourself an account. The first thing you need to do when you create yourself an account is actually create a team project. You get two options here. It doesn't actually matter which button you press. You can do the same thing. But you can pick which version control system you want your project to be based on. I did a talk earlier on in the week, DevB330, which was we actually make available not just Team Foundation version control, TFVC. We also make available Git version control in fully integrated inside of TFS. And it's all integrated with work items and build and so on and so forth. And I did a whole talk about that earlier on in the week, DevB330. So we're going to use TFVC today, as most of you are already using TFS. You'll be familiar with that. But the key thing here I wanted to say, actually, is that the Git support was actually landed in the service in January, was when we enabled it in the service. And then it's now enabled in the on-premise version in the latest TFS 2013 preview, so you can install it locally. But we're a bit sneaky, and the service for us, you might think, this is a great deal, I can use it for free. Well, where's this amazing deal? What's in it for Microsoft? Well, there's two things. One, you're more likely to buy fancy versions of Visual Studio because it uses all the features of TFS, so that's one. But the other one is actually, we're very big believers in build, measure, learn inside Microsoft. And we like to see how people are using our software to find issues, to find performance improvements. And so that's why we put things on the service first. Because it's incredibly hard to get people to run a preview version of the server, which is the central server which controls all of their life and livelihood for making software. So we say, we'll take care of keeping the server up for you, but kind of we're also collecting anonymized data about which features get used, not per account, just, you know, which features get used globally. We look at SQL performance, we tune stored procedures, we do all sorts of things while we're running out in the service, so that when you get the update, you've got a fast version that's been incredibly well tested already out in the cloud and runs very well. And also, we also do lots of little feature customizations based on, somebody's not quite discovered that they have to create a new team project, or somebody's not using this option. Why aren't people generally using this option? Maybe if we change a button or change a color, does that help people learn how to use it? And little things like that. We just iterate and we gradually improve the service all the time. So we get to pick our version control. So I'm going to pick this. And we also get to pick our process template. Limitation of the service. You cannot customize your process template. You can pick one of those three, and that's it. We don't today let you customize your process template. Again, that's because we upgrade you. When we upgrade you, we also upgrade your process template and give you all the latest and greatest features and settings and things. And to do that at the minute, because people who've been through the upgrade know upgrading process templates can be painful if you've heavily customized. So we just don't let you do that so that we can upgrade you seamlessly and we don't have to have any human interruption as we upgrade everybody. So I'm going to pick Scrum. Yes, sir. The question is, can you customize build templates? Yes, you can. Build templates are just stored in source control. And we'll have a look at one of those. And yeah, you can customize those to your heart's content. And in fact, yeah, you can definitely. And we actually do ship a couple of extra build process templates in the cloud version. We have an integration to Azure, which I'll show you. And that ships by default in the cloud version and not in the on-premise one, because you're in Azure, so we can do this kind of thing. So, you can customize build processes. You can customize, you know, there's a lot you can do with your work items and your task boards and your query. You can obviously, queries and everything are customizable. It's the hacking of XML to add fields into work items, changing the flow of work items. Those are the things you can't customize. Okay? Thank you. Great question. So I'm just going to create a quick project here. Adventure Works, hit create project, and then that goes and again does all the provisioning of actually creating the project. Notice I can do this from the web. I don't have to go to Visual Studio to create this project. I can just do it on the web, which is pretty cool. The reason why we can do that is because we're not creating a SharePoint site and a reporting services site, and it's actually those are the two things are the reasons why the project creation wizard is in Visual Studio, because it has to do those in on-premise. It has to do those with your account, not with a service account. So there we go. It's created a team project for you, and your team is apparently going to absolutely love this. Let's hope so. And we come in and we browse to the project. Here's AdventureWorks. And we can see, it gives you some banners every now and then, tells you when things have updated. We'll just hit close. And this is just the dashboard, which if you've seen TFS 2013, or if you've got TFS 2012 Update 3, then this will look very, very familiar to you. The UI should be very, very familiar. We'll go around and we'll have a quick look for the people that haven't seen the latest and greatest bits. So the first thing that I probably want to do, the first thing I would normally do is coming here and make sure my profile's how I want it to be. So customize my picture, give it whatever email address I want to use, give it whatever display name I want to use. You can edit your preferred email address if you wanted to actually send it back to a different email than your live ID, for example. And you can come in and customize your profile. So we like to have pictures of each other. It makes it easier, especially in this new feature called Team Room. Has everyone heard about Team Room from the keynote? Yeah, so it's basically just a team room is, there's going to be nobody in here now because it's just me, but I could actually sign in as somebody else, I guess. But anyway, I can come in here and, hello, Madrid. And you can chat to other people in your team and you've got online chat with them. But also, we'll see in a moment, actually, you can configure events to come into the team room as well. So you can say things like, when a build completes, show me a notification. When anyone checks in code by anyone, then show a notification in the team room. And it's quite a nice way of actually keeping this audit log of what's been going on with your team projects, including chat conversations. And then when, especially as we work in different time zones, we can come in and just have a quick scroll up and see what was being done last night while I was sleeping and the Americans were still awake. So there we go. That'll do. So we can configure some events. So that's team room. That was talked about in the foundational session, FDN02, I believe, Brian Keller's foundational session. So if you want to know more about that, you can go along and watch the video, sorry. And then I want to add some team members now. So go into here and add some team members. So speaking of Brian Keller, we might as well just add him. So let's do Brian Allen Keller. If anyone wanted to know Brian Keller's personal email address, there you go. I'm sure he doesn't mind. And then let's add one of my team. Have I done that right? Brian Allen Keller at hotmail.com. And let's just add Chris Patterson. I'll just do one. Chris is the guy that looks after the build functionality inside TFS. He's a great guy. So there we go. So add those two people to my team, hit save changes, and then they come. And because they've already logged into the service before, it actually pulls up their profile images and things already, and names and stuff, so because they've already customized that. So that's great. So I hit close. So now I've configured my team. And the next thing I probably want to do is actually configure my schedule and my iterations. So I can say, well, it creates a release for me by default. But let's just say this release is going to run from yesterday through till, let's say, Monday. Hit save and close. Quite a short sprint, a weekend one. And then we'll click here. Now, this is interesting. Here's an interesting example of one of those features we discovered by being out in the hosted service. We discovered that this was taking a long time for people to do. And we're like, why is it taking a long time to do? And then we realized, because every time you press the set date button, you have to navigate back and, you know, click on something. So we just did some simple things like set date now. When I click on the date button, it just navigates to the day after the previous sprint's end date. And it's really simple, little changes like that, but we really learn those by running in the service. So we'll go, yeah, that's a great day, thanks. And look at this. It noticed that my last one was 2 working days, and so it'll create a sprint that's 2 working days long. Actually, I probably don't want none that long, so I'm going to go for a full week, hit save and close. Come down here, da-da, it's picked the Monday again because it noticed I like Monday. And now it said, well, last time, oh, hello, did that do it right? Yeah, now it's trying to figure out what I'm doing, so it's getting close, and it's kind of trying to use an algorithm to guess how many days I want in my sprint, and it gradually gets more accurate, hopefully. Let's find out here. This will be exciting. 15 to 19, is that right? Yeah, there we go. It's figured out now. I want week-long sprints now. Brilliant. Great. Lovely. So now I've configured some sprints. I probably want to do some sprint planning. I want to plan the work for my team. So I'm going to come in here, and I'm going to just go to my product backlog. And this is, you know, the fancy. Anyone who's using TFS 2010, this is probably blowing your mind right now. You never knew TFS could look so pretty. But here it is. It's, you know, you can come in and just add some work items into the backlog. So I'm going to say, let's create a quick hello world. And we'll create automated build. Let's do an MVC site, MVC app. And you'll notice, while this is doing it, because the internet connection isn't the fastest in the room, you can see here, even though I'm typing, I'll show you this again. Watch the little, let's do a continuous deployment to Azure. There we go. When I press enter now, you'll see the backlog item get added. Oh, it was too fast. Never mind. Test website. It's all asynchronous, so it doesn't block you while it's actually saving these work items in the background. So if I come here and actually move things around in my backlog, it's doing all this, and I can just do this. And if I have a look at the... So I'll move that back down to here. Let's test the website after we've deployed it, maybe. Yeah, that looks like a good order. And then if I come into here and look at the history, we can actually see that while I was moving all those product backlog items around, it wasn't needing to mess with them because I put them back in the order I had them. But had I have left them there, then it would have done some changes and saved them to the work items. That would have been good. Okay. So now I have my backlog, my features planned out. Maybe I want to come in here and actually say, right, let's do some sprint planning now. So I do that by, what I could do is do some estimations. So how much, effort is this going to take? Well, we'll just say, we'll give them story points, because that's how I like to estimate stories. So, 2, 4, create an automated builder. That sounds hard, doesn't it? So we'll give that one 8. And then maybe continuous deployment. Wow, that's a big word. That's going to be like 34 or something. I don't know. And then test the website. Well, that'll be easy, and we'll probably just leave that to the very end and make them do it really quick. And so we'll just say, here we go. Because, there we go. Right, brilliant. So now if I actually switch on forecasting, I can see roughly with a forecasting velocity of, say, 10 story points, then this will be the sprints that I would get to my product backlog items. So if I think, well, actually, I probably need to test the website after I've deployed it, I can drag it up there and see that it will fit inside of sprint 2, which is quite neat. If we find that the team has it tracks your velocity as you use the service. So if we find the team has a velocity of, say, 50 story points, then obviously that all fits in one sprint, so that's fine. These are just guidelines. These are just, rough lines that it draws for you, but they're quite handy. And I'm going to say, well, okay, maybe we can do all that work. So let's drag that work into sprint 1. And you see, when you drag it, you just drag, drop. You're just dragging and dropping sprint from the backlog. If I make this a bit smaller, you'll see it moving, actually. You see, I'm moving from there to there. And that's me moving sprint. That's me moving work from the backlog into the current sprint. Obviously, the first thing you probably want to do is, when you're in the current sprint and realize you've overcommitted, you might want to move the work back onto the backlog, or you might want to move it into the next sprint. And again, I can just take that work, drag, drop it, and move it between sprints as well. It's very easy. And if you've got a fancy, if you've signed up for anyone signed up to get their services from the offer? If you do that, then it's all touch enabled, so you can actually do all this, using the touch stuff. It's really cool. So I'm going to back to sprint 1 and quickly do some sprint planning. So I'm going to add some tasks here. So, create app in VS 2013. Let's do that. And then we'll do run it. There we go. I just wanted to quickly show you, if you haven't seen the Agile, the planning task board, I'm going to set my team's capacity. So this particular sprint, Brian's been doing a lot of traveling and he's actually going home this weekend. So he's probably only going to get two hours a day to work. Chris, he's a busy guy and he's at the office, so we're going to give him 6 hours. And I've got manager in my title, therefore I only probably do about 4 hours work a day. So that's what we do. So we've set up the sprint capacities. We'll hit save and we'll say, and it now, if you notice down here, it's actually got our rough capacity of how we're working. Now, currently, we don't have any hour estimates, so we're just going to put some hour estimates in, and we'll say there's a remaining work of, 8 hours on that. Probably not, but there we go. And then maybe there's a remaining work here of, say, 3 hours. Hit save and close. And you can see the team's capacity is building up. It keeps track of how much capacity you have for the total team. And then you can actually allocate these tasks to individuals. So I might want to allocate that to Chris. And I might allocate this one to me. And this is just like regular work item tracking, fairly interesting, but it's just work items. So we have some cool other views for the work item stuff as well in the service. And again, these debuted first in the service. So this is a task board, and you can just come in here and drag and drop moved cart story cards around. Maybe I want to reassign this from Chris to Brian Keller. I can just do that from the story card. Or I could say, actually, 3 hours is probably too much. I've only got 1 hour left remaining. And I'm going to go create this app now. So I'll drag this over here, create app. There we go. And again, that's probably an amazingly pessimistic estimate. So I'll just do that. Great. So we can just move stuff around, move stuff back. We can say it's done, and it moves it over here. And notice when it's done, we have in the process template, we have a rule that will actually clear out the number of remaining at work hours left on it because it's done, so it mustn't have any work left on it. So we have all those sorts of things, so it just works. It's great. So that's sprint planning. And then, one of the other things you probably want to do early on is actually go set some favorites in your project, because favorites, as you get from the homepage, they actually appear here. So you might want to come in and, for instance, in the work item tracking side, let's go look at some queries and we'll say, let's take the product backlog query and we'll actually pin that as a team favorite, or we can make it my favorite. Your favorites are stored on the service or in the server, and your favorites are shared not only in the web, but across all clients. So they're shared between Visual Studio, Eclipse, and so on. Question? How are story points compared to ours? Yes. So the question was, when do you use story points and when hours? Out of the box, the Scrum template recommends story points for your product backlog items. So a story point is basically like a T-shirt size. You know, it's a little bit of work. It's a medium amount of work. It's a lot of work. And then the tasks are, the remaining work is governed as hours. Now, if you want to customize that and say that you estimate product backlog items in hours and you want to see hours in your dashboard, or you want to estimate tasks in function points or something, then you can do that and you can change the unit, because it's just an integer field, so you can put whatever you want in. But if you want to change actually what's displayed down here, like H and things, that's, I'm afraid, is a process template customization. So you can do that on premise, but you can't do that in the hosted version. Question? The board customizations that you can do are things like over here, if we do a Kanban board, we have the ability to customize columns and things, customizing states of your stories. You can do all that. But if you want to completely change how the storyboard looks, you can do that with TFS, because TFS is incredibly customizable. That's a process template customization again, so not on the service. Okay. But here I am. I can add columns into the Kanban board easily enough. Okay. Great questions. So, we can do favorites. And when you do a favorite, let's add like the our team project as a source control favorite as well. Add to team favorites. And when you do that, they show up in the team homepage, which is quite neat, as well as showing up inside Visual Studio and showing up inside Eclipse. See here. So you see there's been three recent changes into source control and five different work items edited. And you can actually customize, with Microsoft, you can drag and drop tiles to your heart's content and play with stuff if you want to. We like squares. Okay. The next thing I want to do is we've got our project set up, we've done some planning, let's actually do some work. Well, that's ridiculously easy. We just go over to Visual Studio and I'll do that in a second. So here's blank Visual Studio. I'm going to connect to my team project. I'm currently connected to my one at home, the one I use for my personal projects. But let's just go and we'll add the server in that we created. So what do we call it? tee2013.visualstudio.com. If you ever forget your team project, that this URL here, it's just, if I show you, just add that in. It's just this bit here, teamfoundationserver.visualstudio.com. It's just that. But also, if you go to the, show you quickly, tfs.visualstudio.com account and sign in, then it'll actually show you what your URL is if you can't remember. So I'm hoping this is just going to log me in quick and I can show you this page. Click. There you go. I've got lots of accounts because I play. Normally, you should only have one here. But I have a special login which lets me create loads of accounts. So there we go. Okay. So I've connected in Visual Studio. Hit close. And now I can connect to my team project, my AdventureWorks team project. So we hit connect, and we're connecting. So that's how you link Visual Studio to TFS in the cloud. And it's the same with Eclipse. It's just the same as TFS. You just point at it, connect, and off it goes. It's obviously a HTTPS URL. It's all over SSL. But it's great. Now, this is Visual Studio 2013 preview, so it's given me some helpful hints here about configuring my workspace to get started. But I know what I'm doing, so I'm just going to say don't ask again. That's an annoying question. Question, sir? So the question was, how do we use TFS inside Microsoft? There is all different ways. So we have some really big instances of on-premise Team Foundation server. They're actually installed inside virtual machines, but they live on really big metal. I think the Visual Studio code base is stored on a server called VSTS DevDiv, the developer division, and that has all 3,500 people or whatever inside developer division on one server. And that's a virtual machine and on-premise machine with heavily customized process templates and things. That's there. That has a 17 terabyte database backing it as well. It's a big boy, you know. It's a big machine. I personally, my team, we work on the Eclipse integration and the some of the other bits. We actually use an account in the service. So we have an account that we have out there. If anyone, I can come show you it later on as well. And that's where we check in all our source code, do all our builds, do all our work item tracking things out in the cloud. And then we have some other teams who have it out in the cloud. And we actually have an offering inside Microsoft where people get to pick when they want Team Foundation Server. They go to Microsoft IT, or Business Group IT, and they ask for a Team Foundation Server. And they say they get to pick whether they want an on-premise instance of their own, which they then have to pay Microsoft IT for the servers and to maintain it. If they want to be on a shared internal instance, which is very similar to the cloud hosting partners. You know, it's managed by Microsoft IT, but it's you're not an admin on that box. You don't get to do whatever you want to it. They look after it for you, but they keep it running for you. So that's a bit like the cloud folks, and they will help you customize it if you want to. And then we have teams are also available to go to the cloud if they want to as well. So they get to pick basically. And we have a number of internal teams using the cloud version, and typically it's when they want to work with. We use it because it was convenient for my team, because we're all remote, but also we use it to dog food it to make sure it works. There are other teams that use it because they work with a lot of external partners, and rather than getting them Microsoft smart cards so they can get onto the network and things like that, they just add their Live ID account in and can work. We have guidelines inside the company about the level of source code that's allowed in, and source code is what's classed as a medium business impact or something, depending on the source code that it is. A lot of our source code is already shared. You know, a lot of the Team Explorer Everywhere source code is open source anyway, so it doesn't, you know, we're fine putting that on there. But there are some source code projects where if I'm not allowed to put somebody else's source code into the cloud without asking that group inside Microsoft, if you know what I mean. So, but for my code, I own it all. I put it there. So, great question. So here we are connected, and I'm just going to quickly, you know, let's just do a quick hello world, like we said, and it's dead easy. Hello world, we'd stick it in TEE 2013, and we'll create a hello world project, and we'll say add to source control. So there's a little checkbox there, add to source control. Now when I go to add to source control, it's going to ask me which type of source control I want to use. I want to use Team Foundation version control in this case, TFVC, so I'm going to say OK. And then it's going to help me add this into source code. So AdventureWorks. Now, top tip for you. The first thing you want to do, even though it's telling you to put your solution under AdventureWorks Hello World, create yourself a folder called main. Doesn't matter. For anyone that doesn't know about branching, fine, don't worry. Just trust me that calling it called main will mean if you want to take an advanced sort of branching structure later, then you'll be really happy that you've got a folder called main. It will save you moving files around later. And that's, if you want to know more about branching and stuff, then read, I think it's chapter 7 of the Pro TFS book, written by a very clever guy, you know, not me. So there we go, okay. So I'm going to create a folder called main, stick my source code in there, and then that's going to add that code and share it with my Team Foundation server to make it available to my team. So if I go into my pending changes window, here we are, there's the little changes, and I can just say initial version, hit check in, and then that's going to check in that change as a change set. And if I go back to my account over here and go look at code. We've vastly improved the code exploring experience along the way since the release of TFS 2012. So I can come in here and look at my source code and, you know, browse around and stuff, and I can go look at that, and I get fancy syntax highlighting and all sorts of stuff. So, yeah, there we go. So it's not very interesting right now. So let's just quickly, before we, I should probably done, let's just actually say, in fact, let's try and be, hola, Madrid. There we go. That's as close as I get. Madrid, there we go. Right, okay. There we go, right. Right, and then we'll just save that. And then when you want to check in code again, you see automatically that code has appeared here as a change ready to get checked in, so I could check it in. We're using a new feature in TFS 2012, we introduced it, and it's obviously in 2013, called local workspaces. So if I actually went in here and added a file, so I'll just say new file test.txt, and I'll just add that outside in the file system, we can actually see Visual Studio's automatically detected that that there's a file there that for me to add, and it'll help me add those. If I edit a file outside of Visual Studio, it'll actually help me edit those. So if I say edit this app config, open with, let's open that in Notepad, then blah, 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 blah. I don't know what I want to put in here, but I'm going to put something in here. I'll hit save. Watch this. I'm going to hit save here. And you see that automatically it detects that it's been edited, which is quite neat. I didn't have to check it out. And even better, actually, if I delete that change and hit save, it automatically detects that it's no longer different. So I don't have to explicitly check out files anymore either, which is quite neat. So there we go. So let me just some changes. Hit check in. And there we go, added them to the server. If I go back, have a look at the server, and look at my code again, so go back up to main. We can see last change, oh, it says 2 minutes ago. Let's try again. Let's hit refresh and see if we've got a... okay, did I check it in? Let's find out over here, go back to here. Let's just browse down and we'll see if our stuff's arrived. Okay, here we go. So less than a minute ago, made some changes. I can click on the actual individual change and click on that, and that'll take me to the change set. And you see we've got this fancy inline diff view now that gives you a preview of what you've actually been editing in your files. That's all cool. Right, the next thing we want to do, so that's just a simple project. We've checked it in. We can share it with our team now so other people can download that and edit it and work on it to their heart's content. Let's just pop into the team room just to see, actually. So I'll go over here into team room. I should probably have kept this open. But if we go into team room, we can actually see there were some notifications that came into the team room while I was away. So I can see, oh, yeah, I've done some shit. And I can click on those. So I can actually see when other people in my team have edited files and go and click on their change set, which is quite cool. So the next thing I'm going to do is create a quick build. And builds are really easy to do now. If I go to the home page, click on builds, I want to create an automated build for my project. Let's just create a nightly build for now. You can do continuous integration or scheduled, whatever. So I'm going to say build the Hello World project. So that's what you want to call the build. The trigger is when you want the build to run. So it's set to manual. I can run it on continuous integration, build every time I check in. I can do gated check-in, rolling build, so on and so forth. Or I can go for a scheduled build, i.e. build on a certain time of day, every day. So let's do that, and let's build it just for fun. Let's build it at 11 a.m. There we go. That'll be interesting to see what happens. Okay. We'll hit save. And then we've also got some other settings here. What do you want to build? So the source code that you want to build. Where do you want to build it? And look at this. You've got an option of hosted build controller. So with every account, we also create a build controller and attach it to your account. So this is pretty clever, because now you can actually check in code and build the code in the cloud without having to set any machines up. So I'm going to say, yeah, I'll have a hosted build controller. That sounds great. And then where do you want the output for your build to be? You can check it into version control, you can drop it on the file share, or you can copy it to the server, and it'll actually, this is a new feature in TFS 2013, that'll actually allow you to, and the service obviously, that allow you to store it in the server outside of version control, which some people quite like. Being in the server, it's easy to access over the service, so that's great. What do you want to build? And then finally, how many do you want to keep of what you're building so it keeps it pruned? Great, that all looks good. Let's just manually trigger this build just to make sure we've done it right. So we're going to say queue new build, hit queue. And if we head over to the website again, over here. I wanted to leave that room running. Hang on. I'll leave that running in a new tab. And I'm going to, there we go. Okay, so let's go back to our AdventureWorks project and we will go to builds. And we can see the build we've got. Oh, look at this. Here you go. This is great as well, about building the service. Look, we've already got Windows 8.1 preview build servers available to you. That sounds great. I've not tried this before. I'm going to click it. I've added that to my account. No idea what that does, but it now looks like I can build Windows 8.1 apps. Awesome. So I haven't even had to go and download all that stuff and deal with the team and get access to the Windows 8.1 build. So I got them here available. And we switched that on yesterday evening. And that's another trick that we do is we deploy bits every 3 weeks, but sometimes we're not ready to switch them on. Maybe it's because the feature's not done yet, but we want to have it in the service so that we can do some internal testing before we make it available for everybody. We sometimes trial features with a pilot group of users, either randomly selected or based on MVPs and customers and preview customers and things. And other times it's because we're working with another team like the Windows team, and they might want to announce the fact that Windows 8.1 exists themselves at the build conference, so we let them do that. It's probably wise for my career. So we have these things called feature flags, which we enable and disable, so we can enable and test features on people while they're running in the cloud and give preview, early access to things, even though we've only got one build that's ever deployed. Okay. Sorry, I went to go to queued builds. And we see that build's actually queued up and it's running. And how the builds work is it takes, we have a VM image of a build server. Just one second. Yep. It takes a VM image of a build server and it takes that VM image, clones it into Azure. Well, it's already in Azure. Clones it, stands it up as a new machine in Azure, and then connects it to your account. It runs your build, and then when your build's finished, it takes that virtual machine and destroys it and then frees the VM from the pool ready for another VM to come in the next person's build. So you only get on those hosted build agents, the only thing you can install on them is what was already installed by us, which is Visual Studio 2013, 2012, 2010, the Windows Azure tools, all basically a lot of stuff of ours and NuGet and things. If you want to install other things on the build server, you have to bring your own, i.e. check them into source control. Or you can install your own build agent, your own build server, on-premise or even out in the cloud, using Azure, and point it at your TFS service account. They're all options. So if you've got code signing certificates, which you really, really don't want to let outside the firewall, but you're happy with everything else being there, then you can have an on-premise build server with the code signing certificates installed on it, and keep that inside the firewall, but point it out to the service. Question? Oh, well, there we go. I'm amazing. Great. I'm psychic. Fantastic. Okay. Oh, okay. Not every question. Yeah. Is the build server able to download NuGet packages? Yes, very definitely. And it's incredibly fast because the NuGet CDN is also in Azure. So, it doesn't even have to go outside the firewall, outside the network. But no, it's really, really fast. Yeah. But for our external things, it's great. So that's and using NuGet to manage dependencies is a highly recommended way of working. That's how I personally work with a lot of my personal projects. So we love NuGet. Okay, so that's simple build, whatever. Yeah, very exciting. You've seen build before. What I wanted to do now was I'm just going to jump over to an MVC project I prepared earlier. I promise this is just a far new MBC project, but I created it earlier because an MBC project is actually, it's got lots of files in. This is why I like them. It's like 200 files in a file new MBC project. So I created one of those just as I was up on stage here, attached it to my personal account, and what I want to do now is show you how to do build and deployment, continuous deployment of a website to Azure. So I'm going to go over to here and look at my managed websites. I've currently got a site that's there that I did while I was preparing the other day, just to make sure I've got a backup in case things go horribly wrong. But let's create a new site. And this is in the Windows Azure portal. I can just come in here. And again, if you've got MSDN, you can take advantage of your fantastic MSDN benefits to create websites and virtual machines and things for free based on your allowances. So I'm just going to create a server. So we'll say TEE 2013. I wonder if that's available. Wow, that's a great site to get. How did we get that? And then we'll stick that in North Europe because that's closer to where we are. And brilliant. Let's create that website. So now I'm going out to Azure. I'm telling Azure, I would like a website, please, at azurewebsites.net. Okay, so that's creating it and doing all the provisioning for me. And again, this is doing all that stuff that you would have had to do by, you know, finding a machine, finding a hoster, getting firewalls open, getting access, boom, it's all done for you very quickly. It's great. I provisioned a server. Now what I want to do is deploy my code to this server. Now obviously you can do it using all the Azure deployment stuff, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, let's just hook it up to source control, please. Let's hook it up to the Team Foundation service, and I want to connect it to my personal account. I'm just going to connect it to you now, the one I've got this code in. I'm going to authorize it, and it uses OAuth to actually establish a trust between the Windows Azure Management Portal and the service. And now what it's going to do is look at my TFS site and look at which repositories I've got. And I'm going to tell it to use AdventureWorks. And now it's actually going to hook up and integrate the MVC website I have in my AdventureWorks project and connect that up to Azure. So what's it doing? It's just done a lot of voodoo. If I go back into Visual Studio and actually look at this project and go to Team Explorer, what we can see, and I'm just going to hit refresh. What we can see is it's created a new build definition for us called TEE2013_CD. You can rename that build definition. That's the default one it created. And what that is, for people that understand the build system, if I double click on that, edit build definition. You just go in and have a look what it did. So it created me one. It said it was continuous integration by default. Cool, I'll go with that. Actually, we find people deploying to Azure websites. Statistically, at the minute, from TFS, they're doing a lot of nightly builds. And we think that's because what people are doing is they're doing continuous integration locally and just running unit tests. And then they're all quite often doing a nightly build to deploy last night's build onto a server for then the QA team to come in and test against. So that's fine. However you want to use it. I'm just going to do it continuous integration because then I can show you on stage. I can do it on every single check-in. Here's the source code for the build. Run on the build controller. The process template to use, this is the one I was talking to you about. This is the Azure Continuous Deployment process template, which, again, we add to your team project by default. But it does live, if I do this, if you know about customizing builds, you can see there, I'm just going to click on view, and it's showing it in source code. There you go. It lives in source code, so if you want to edit that and change that, then you can. But we're not, because this isn't a build talk. So we'll come in here, and then there we go. So that's what I know I want to build my MVC project. Now, it's a bit sneaky, and if what it does is it looks for a website project that it can deploy inside your source code when you connect. And if it finds one and only one, then it'll just connect it for you. Makes a great demo. But if you have more than one, which is more common, it just leaves it blank and puts a little exclamation mark on it. And you can go in and edit that and tell it which solution you want to actually deploy. But luckily, I only have one, so it's a great demo. So I'm just going to run this. Which I probably should have done earlier, just to queue up a build and deploy a website out for me. So, did I do queue new build? Right click, queue new build. Okay, queue a build, there we go. So that's going to go queue a build and work on the web. So now what it's doing is it's taking my website that I've checked in, and it's, let's just browse to that again. It's taken my website and it's going to, it's currently waiting for a build agent to be free. So we have a pool of build agents that we limit how many machines are in that pool. Once the next build agent is free, we'll then pop that build onto the queue, and then it'll run, and it will do the site, run the unit tests, and then only if the unit tests pass, it'll then deploy that site out to Azure, which is pretty neat. So while that's running, we'll come back to this one in a second. I do have one I prepared earlier, because I want to show you some other features as well while that's running. So back to here. We see I had a TEE Martin Azure Websites, which is the site I created earlier, just so we've got one to play with while this is building. And this is a, here we go, this is me just playing and sticking some stuff into this particular Azure website here. And what I want to show you now, while the build's running, after you've built the website, the next thing that you want to do is test the website. So we have a product called Microsoft Test Manager that's great for managing your tests, managing your manual test cases and things. Fantastic. One of the bits of feedback we heard is that people want to be able to test on machines without installing anything on them at all. So luckily, most machines come with a web browser installed on them. So we thought, well, let's build a web version of Test Manager for you. We also use it. Well, my team actually use this, the web client, to do testing from the Mac and from Linux, where we want to test our application, but Microsoft Test Manager only runs on Windows. So, you know, we use the web version of Test Manager to do test case management. So let's show you that. If I go over and I go to click on the Test tab, and it says, you can't create test cases without a test plan. Click clear to create a test plan. Brilliant. So we'll say, test website, test adventure works, doesn't it? No, let's call it adventure works website. There we go. So I've created a test plan. Now, in your test plan, you add tests. So I'm going to quickly come in here and add a test. So I'm going to say check the about page or something like that. Check about page. And then we'll come down and we will, let's add some steps to our test. So we'll say navigate to, I'll put this one in for now and then hopefully the other one will have deployed by the time I've done the test stuff and we'll change it. Navigate to blah, click on the about tab, click on the about tab, and then check the footer, says copyright AdventureWorks. Great, that'll do, it's a quick and easy test. So then I hit save and close, so I've saved that, I've created the test case all in the web, and I can now execute this test case in the web. When I do that, it's gonna pop up a window. Let's just go here and see, let's check our other website quickly, deployments. Oh, cool. Okay, so if I go back to my builds, we'll see the build's actually succeeded and it's currently deploying the site. I mean, probably by the time I get in, it might have already done it. Oh, no, no, here we go. There it is, that one there, wasn't it? Okay, that build succeeded. If I go and click on that build, we can see there it's ran. And look, it's deployed. If I now go and look at Azure, we can see, look, that website's deployed. So if I click on the, let's change the homepage now here to TEE 2013, we can see, hopefully, Control A, Control C, we can see that it's deployed, hopefully. It should be. It's going to fire up the website for the first time. Yep, it's exactly the same code, so it looks the same, but that's on the TEE 2013 website. Brilliant. So let's change our test plan quickly. We'll just, sorry, open the test case, and we'll change our test plan to be, rather than navigate to that, actually we want to navigate to that. Brilliant. Okay. There we go. Save and close. Great. So now I'm going to run this test plan. So I'm going to hit run here, and then run. You can also run it using, you can also run it using Microsoft Test Manager if you have it installed. I do, which is why it's given me that option. But I'm going to run it using the web test case management. So it opens up a little pop-up window on the side here, and it says navigate to there. So let's just do navigate to there. Click on the link. Great. Navigated to there. And then what does it want me to do? So I'll say, yep, test passed. Click on the About tab. Great. About page is displayed. Lovely. And then look at check the footer says copyright AdventureWorks. Ah, it doesn't. So I'm going to say no. And I'm going to say it says it has sample text still. And I can save that as a failing test, but I can also create a bug from this. And I can say fix the footer text. And if I go down, it's captured all of my test steps, so that as a tester, I can reproduce exactly what I need to do to be able to be able to find this bug. So there we go. So I've created a bug. I probably should assign it to me, but never mind. And I'm going to hit save and close on that test case. So there we go. That's doing test case management in the cloud as well. And then finally, while we've got some time, I'm going to come back into Visual Studio. Yes, sir. The question is, if you find two different errors, will that create two different bugs? You can choose to when you can choose when to exit your test case, or you can create as many bugs as you want during the test case run. So yes is a short answer, but it doesn't have to. And I can show you this later on as well if you want a bit more of a play. Yes, sir. Yeah, I mean the client is the functionality in the for running tests, it doesn't collect that when you run tests using the client, it collects a lot of system diagnostics. It obviously can't do that in the web because it can't go on. For some reason, we don't let the web browser tell you everything that's running on the local machine and getting teletrace logs and things like that. So yes, there is, but for manual test cases, it actually is a really good test system. But there are limitations. The client is a much richer experience, but if you don't want to install anything on that machine, then the web is a great way to go as well. The question was, what about things like screen captures within the test steps? We're actually adding functionality so you can add images into the work item results, so we should be able to do that. I'm not sure if this particular build has it in yet, though, so I'll forgive me if I don't do that right now. Because what I wanted to do was just make a quick change. So I'll say modify this template here, and we'll say Hola Madrid. And we'll also fix that bug, maybe, if we get time. Let's fix the test because it won't deploy unless the test's working. Hola Madrid. Did I do an exclamation mark or not? Let's find out. No. Okay. Okay, so I fixed down the test and views, shared, main layout. Let's go down here. And copyright, here you go, AdventureWorks. And I can obviously associate that check-in with, so I can right-click here, do check-in, and I can associate that with my work item ID, which I wish I'd remembered, but I could go find it, obviously. In fact, why don't I just... save time, I'll just go over here and do it so you can see. Let's quickly do a quick, oh, there we go. Incorrect, hello world, no, not on those. Whatever. I'm just going to associate with a random work item for now. We'll do it with 123, just because I didn't want to go find it. So we'll say, let's just do 123 or something, there we go. And then fix issue. Great, check in. So now I'm checking in. So now I've done a check into the cloud, build to the cloud, and deploy to the cloud all in the cloud without having to set anything up. So there we are. Right. And I'll quickly round up. So we obviously support all the clients. That was it, actually. We've got all the clients you can connect in, Xcode and Git clients and things, as well as Eclipse. And if you want to get started, go to tfs.visualstudio.com. Please fill out your evals. If we don't get, it's harder on the last day because I know you're all jetting off. But if I don't get more than 10 back from you, then I actually don't get to come again. So please do your evals. And if you've got any questions, please email me and we'll grab you later on. Thank you very much for your time.